driving your own car. I found my church culture had a lot of passwords they used to kind of test to see if you were us or them. So when I met someone's gay brother-in-law, the culture correct expected answer to the question, "What do you think of James?" was always and only to be that I was concerned, mildly disgusted, and troubled by his homosexuality, even though he wasn't pursuing the lifestyle. If I said he was great on the piano and drew amusing pictures, that was the wrong answer. I've mentioned how when people asked if I didn't agree that it was terribly nice to be out Lord's Day morning to the only correct church to attend, that the only culture correct expected response was, of course, "Yes, so nice." Not, "It certainly seems to be important to you that the other churches be wrong. Why is that?" Now, a very good question might be raised at this point. What's wrong with people intruding on your life? Why not just let them? Where's the real harm, practically speaking? Well, it's not natural. By that I mean that there's natural, and there is what is contrary to nature. Adults being parented and treated as if they were still children isn't any more natural than breastfeeding them when they're 35. It slows down their maturation both by not letting them mature and also by making them not need to mature. Is unnatural bad? Think of a mother who wanted to come along on her daughter's honeymoon to supervise, instruct, and advise in the bedroom. Gross? Unnatural? Well, unnatural is bad. Also, would said theoretical mother-in-law be helping or hurting the success of that marriage? Is the path of wisdom to humor her or to put up a boundary? To shut the bedroom door and lock it? I don't think it's any different with the day-to-day life of a young adult. It would take a pretty special family to not put up a firm boundary to any mother who wanted to go along on her child's honeymoon. But how far back in time would you need to go before you would find a problem? How long ago would you see boundaries that were simply not put up regarding how she insisted on micromanaging and generally backseat driving her daughter's life? Courtship? Moving out? Post-secondary? First job? Thing is, if you're not letting your adult offspring live their own lives, you're stealing something from them which was given to them by God Himself. One time when I was 25, I was thinking upon a very brethren concept. The idea that one day I would stand before God and have to give an account of all my life choices. What kind of a life was I living? What kinds of choices was I making? What did it all add up to and where was it headed? A realization hit me during this train of thought. This train traveled as I drove a 73 Ford Granada down Beckwith Street to work. God might simply not accept the excuse that most of my decisions were really just me buckling to pressure from my church culture. He might expect me to justify them, just as if I'd thought about them myself and made them all on purpose, by myself. He might hold me accountable for my own life. Terrifying, because a lot of these life decisions didn't make a whole lot of sense, not in that decade, in that life. I wasn't, in any real sense, driving my own car, myself, in my adult life. I was sitting in the back seat letting others drive it for me, deciding where to turn left, when to start braking, and even when it was time for an oil change. With this frightening thought came another. I was absolutely going to have to snatch back my adult life from the clutching fingers of the gerontocracy that was my church culture. I was going to have to do what I thought was best, what I really thought God wanted. I might even need to do it with a certain amount of disregard for their expectations as to what a godly Christian life, which is honoring to the Lord and a good testimony to this world, look like. And they weren't going to like it. I wasn't wrong. 3 years later, they'd tossed me out on my butt, ecclesiastically speaking. I then stood as a lesson to the unwary. Kids looking on got the message, all right. You had to love Big Brother, otherwise you'd be vaporized like I'd been. So fall into line. No thought crime, no face crime, no visits to where the proles live, or you'd become, like me, an unperson, deleted from brethren history, not allowed to procreate. It may sound like I exaggerate, but I remember adults talking sadly or smugly about who had lost their children. And they didn't mean the children had died. It meant they weren't attending meeting. Bob sure used to have a lot to say to us, but his mouth shut now that he's lost all three of his kids. They don't even stop touring around preaching nowadays when that happens. They used to have to. I really do believe that independent thought, confidence, and other virtues were precisely what were making me stand out in the eyes of the elders, which made me fall under the glassy gaze of their ecclesiastical sniper scopes. I sure wasn't perfect, but as time went by, it became increasingly obvious that they forgave any number of people for any number of vices, but certain virtues never went unpunished. You could sin and still be us. You could not grow and stay the same. Clearly, you were expected to fight growth as it was change. You were to keep things old for the sake of the old folks. Where this boundaries thing got messy was when things were perhaps a bit codependent. I'm no expert on the subject, but what I mean by the word is that many of the people who intruded most thoughtlessly, shamelessly, and insidiously in my life were people who did something or somethings for me, so felt like I owed them special leeway. Some people changed the oil in my car for me free of charge, or mended my clothes, or gave me free-range eggs or hot casseroles or things like that. But then they tended to comment on, inquire into, and interfere in things I really didn't need them involved in. And then I felt incredibly guilty trying to reinforce those boundaries that would have kept them out of my business. I owed them something, so I felt guilty. Owing money is an even worse situation. Hearing a few of them actually put into plain words the fact that I owed them, and therefore that they felt perfectly entitled to meddle in my life, helped me to feel less guilty. Some people intruded by asking for information or generally snooping, others by sharing my information with anyone who would listen. Others continually expressed concern over any of my decisions that struck them as odd or unexpected, often before I'd even quite finished making them. Others spoke up for me and made decisions that affected me without my even being involved. I needed say over my life. I needed privacy. If I were to sing a touching song about surrendering all of my life to God, it would have needed a verse about having to wrestle a horde of grabby relatives and meeting people for it in the first place before I could even lay a finger on my own life to surrender it to Him. I felt a huge amount of stress, dejection, and anxiety over the enormous pressure weighing down on me to never screw anything up, but even more importantly, never do anything unexpected. I felt no sense of adult freedom at all, and it was killing me. I felt like I absolutely had to do a complicated figure skating routine in the Olympics with everyone watching. I had to land every jump and do every twirl, even though I was lying bleeding and bruised and broken in an alleyway, beaten and battered by the everything of everyone. A great big wall, Pink Floyd style, behind which one hides in pain, isolated and alone, isn't the ideal when it comes to healthy boundaries. That's not what I'm recommending. It's more like the expression, good fences make good neighbors. You want them over for a barbecue, and maybe you want to swim in their pool, but your fence needs a locking gate. You need those fences up, or their dog will crap all across your patio, and your cat might eat their cockatiel. And they need to allow you to have curtains over your windows so you can use the toilet in peace. To say that I figured out and navigated all of this with panache in my mid-20s would be what is generally called a lie. But I got it worked out eventually. I had to be unafraid to cause a fuss if someone was going to walk roughshod over boundaries that mattered to me. I had to not overreact or get angry. I had to be willing to make things slightly socially awkward in order to avoid endless awkwardness for the rest of my life. I needed to make sure in my adult life that I had not trained people to feel very free to intrude on what was supposed to be about God and me alone. Really, another big part of the road to success for me in this one was I had to become self-sufficient. I had to get to a place where I really didn't need anyone for anything, which took a good while. This meant I could help instead of being helpless all the time, and that when someone did me a favor or helped me in return, it just made things in my life more convenient rather than making them actually possible. Structure. The first thing I had to do was gently, firmly push away all the people who were trying to hold me to a structured lifestyle I had never agreed to. It wasn't easy. Doom was prophesied from all quarters. The next thing I had to do was ensure that my life had a structure of some kind. Some people don't do this and end up lying around a lot, not regularly working, not eating, sleeping, and showering, and so on very well. Others end up doing nothing but work and not eating, sleeping, and recreating themselves very well. You need some structure, but you need to make it yourself. So, for example, a budget is good. The whole 80-20 rule. However small or large each paycheck, put 20% of it in savings and spend the 80%. But having your parents make a budget for you and check up on you paycheck by paycheck to see if you're adhering to it is humiliating and not very adult. Yet, A budget is good. Makes sense to come up with one, often grabbing a disinterested third party to help you. Computers make numbers add and subtract themselves, which is good for number numbskulls like me. And payment schedules and so on can be written on calendars or typed into computers. I learned that if I couldn't see it, it didn't seem real to me, so a calendar on the wall was always there reminding me. The thing about a budget is, you start to see things that you need that you would at first not think to budget for. You learn you have to budget for fun. Otherwise, either you don't have any, or you don't know how much you can spend on it and go overboard. So plan on funding a bit of it. Sleep is important too, it turns out. I worked rotating shifts in my 20s, so that was a bit of a train wreck. But I quickly learned that it was actually harder to work when I hadn't slept than if I hadn't eaten. Your sanity starts to go really quickly. So I worked out sleep routines. Nowadays, we know that sleep routines are very light related, as to your brain knowing to sleep. And this is a problem for people who need to work nights, and for people whose wind-down sleep routine involves lit-up screens of various kinds. Of course, it's possible to fall asleep in front of a TV, especially if you're not playing video games, but that screen is keeping you up far longer than your brain would otherwise stay awake, given some other non-light-related cue to sleep. E-books are a bit of a problem in this regard too, now that they light up. I had to buy thick curtains and develop winding down routines. Had to make sure I'd already taken some time and done my thinking so it wasn't all waiting for me when it was time to sleep. Food is important. In our culture, it's almost inevitable that we will be fat by 25. It's not our fault that so much inexpensive fat and sugar-laced stuff is available on almost every corner. The solution for me was to make up almost arbitrary-seeming rules. I'd grown up with rules, so I made some. No more than one pop a day, and only if it was Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Ice cream? Yes, but only once per month. Chocolate? Sure, but only if I'd just eaten a meal. Chips? Okay, but I had to be standing to eat them. Dessert? Only if I'd eaten two kinds of vegetables that meal. Odd stuff that made it less convenient to be dumb. As to exercise, I had to learn to get along with my body. Had to learn not to use exercise to punish it because I hated it. Had to learn to feel energy needing to get out. Had to feel a hunger for movement that was natural as a hunger for food or sleep. My friend Mark encouraged me, though we didn't keep the Sabbath, to make the work week stop abruptly before supper on Friday. Once I got a Monday to Friday job, of course. I needed to really feel that I was done for the week. A big answer to stress problems is to always be able to look forward to a stop time. You need to be able to trust in things stopping every week. Structure and rules didn't go away from me, but I'd taken the wheel. After all, I would one day give account of my life to God, so it had to become my life. I make rules for myself all the time. No pop until the weekend. If I want to skip the gym after school, I have to do laps up and down the stairwell before I go home. Stuff like that, designed to try to add some structure to my life, myself, for my own reasons. They are not morally correct or incorrect. They are just structure and nothing else. It's good to keep them, but not wrong to break them. I make them up, and I keep them, or change them, or break them, and there's no smugness or shame in any of it. It's just living. It's not about being a good person. I feel free to make structures for myself, to set limits and make little rules, while ignoring the fearful, fun-hating system I was raised in. I read the Bible, and I can't believe how little of it is about limits. And that changes everything. The Bible? It's not the fun police. It's actually downright inspiring. Often makes me feel things other than fear, panicked resolve to try harder, and shame when I read it now.